Thanks for coming. Today we're going to present profiling desktop applications. I believe everyone at some point in time, regardless which operating system you guys use, be it Linux or Unix or Windows or other operating systems, definitely encounter things like slow application startup, or maybe there's some daemon running in your system and it's looking up at a certain fixed interval and you do not know why it's happening. Or maybe you have an application that is running fine, but one day is incurring a lot of IO activity, and then which leads to system crashing, but you do not know what is happening. So these are problems, and usually end users do not really care. They usually try to get you to the problem, ignore it, and do their work. But these are problems that we need to look at, finding out, you know, what is actually happening. Why do we get these kind of problems? And in this talk, we're going to focus on certain profiling tools that are available in various Linux distributions, and I'm going to focus on Vigrain, OProfile, System Tab, and so on. My name is Eugene Teo from Red Hat Asia Pacific. I'm a technical account manager. I generally like to study the Linux kernel, contributed quite a number of patches here and there. Profiling is something that I do during my free time. And this is my co-presenter, Wei.
My name is Wei. I'm from Red Hat as well. I'm part of sustaining engineering. I do a fair bit of profiling in my fair bit job as well, because often I'm going to find out why applications are behaving strangely, or why they're just doing something kind of weird or unexpected. So, okay, to me, when I profile an application, I've got to have two mindsets, a scientific mindset and a detective mindset. I think that these are really important to have both these ideas in mind when profiling. Because as a scientist, you have to profile an application, and when you do, you've got to have a hypothesis, like a plan, what you think could be wrong with it. You have to make an experiment, and then make it reproducible so that you can share with your peers. There's no point having a patch all to yourself, because essentially what you really want to do, and it's very open source, you want to share the fix with people. So as a detective, you have to use all the tools and clues at your disposal to make the best decision to figure out exactly where the performance problem, or where the issue, the slowdown, the thrashing, whatever the problem may be like. Okay, before I start, I can't explain enough that the importance of engaging the community. You'd be surprised how often it is that the upstream maintainers, other developers are very aware of the problem, and most times people already may have a fix for it. So you can spend hours tracking down this small problem, this loops too often, or the loops, it doesn't have a cache, and be surprised already that it's already fixed upstream, or somebody already has the fix on their hard drive, and just needed to be prodded into getting into the CVS or into a running version. So, who profiles applications? Can I get anyone who's a software developer to push hands up? Okay, system architects or sysadmins? Okay, now anyone who does benchmarking, don't put your hands up because I don't want to have to call you liars. Okay, benchmarks do have a very important part in profiling. It's really useful to know how one version of an application competes with another, like for example Apache, then you do a change, then you do a comparison. Benchmarking is really not useful when you have two different applications. You can say yes, Apache may take more memory than say Boa, but then it has a completely different skill set. So benchmarking can be used, profiling can be used to benchmark, but the question is it useful? To most people, the answer is no. But in magazines and some writers like to use it as a guide to say which application is better. Okay, so the profiling lifecycle. This may seem a bit basic for most people, but hopefully what I'm going to get out of it is an example on how to go through and set up a successful from start to finish. So there's three major steps. Prepare the environment, track down and solve, and then upstream acceptance. So we're going to go through each one of those now. Okay, stage one, preparing the environment. Now, a common problem that people have is not simulating the production environment. They may be running CVS code, or maybe running stuff that's fixed upstream, or they may be running their own not commonly used version of software. There's not really much of a point fixing a bug in GNOME 2.14 when it's already fixed in 2.16. All that section of code doesn't even get called. So that's one thing I've learned when attempting to fix bugs in old versions of software. It's really important to run the current version that most people will be using. Because as an upstream developer, you don't really want to accept fixes for code that you've already solved or rewritten. and also you want to use production hardware. And most developers, as usual, have a pretty beefy system. I mean, why wouldn't you? You have compiles, you want to, you may compile nodes, or do a certain application 30 times a day. And so yeah, that's what you do. But just remember, when you are profiling that application, most people won't have 2 gigs of RAM. Most of desktop users will be low in Pentium 3s with 512 megs of RAM remote. So it's important that when you profile an application, you really need to get the end user's experience. And that involves running it on the same hardware that they were before, very similar. Now, reliable hardware is another thing which I've often run into. I often simulated my profiling at Red Hat on a Pentium 3 800. Now, if the disk was a bit flaky, you'd be surprised how much that can change how long it takes to finish a CPU-intensive program. If you can't swap the disk, you're going to have a real problem. In preparing the environment, you want to disable any disruptive services such as cron, log rotation, or CPU speed, unless, of course, you wish to benchmark these specific things. Okay, so tracking down developers is stage two. Whenever you are attempting to fix a problem, you have to understand what the problem is. If you think that, let's say something, open up takes too long to start. I'm sure everyone's seen this. It's a common problem. But it's not, because it's not a simple fix to end the problem. So you're defining a goal, open up takes too long. So after you figure that, you want to make and create an automated death case. So this would be have a script, which could be dogpad if you're testing a graphical application in GNOME, or the Linux desktop testing project, or there's alternatives for KDE. But you want to have one of these scripts that runs the unmodified code, the original version of what you're trying to fix. So you have the script, start the program, stop it, and then record whatever it is. In this case, what we're talking about is how long OpenOffice takes to run, or start up, and then close it. So you build the test case. Then after this, you build a hypothesis. Now, does anybody have any ideas why OpenOffice takes so long to load?
Java.
Thank you for more. So how would you fix that problem? No ideas? Okay, we could possibly think maybe pre-caching of disk files might be faster. We could think that maybe disabling Java could be faster, especially if we're not using it, or maybe loading it later. So what we can do, the hypothesis is, we think that loading Java is slow. Pretty common hypothesis. Okay, so we can delay it. So say I was to take that part. I've changed one thing. Not two things, not 10 things. Anyone who's done high school science realizes you change one single thing. So we delay the load of Java until the UI probably unloaded. If that's possible or not, I don't know. But say that's just pretend that. So we delay the loading of Java, which would be part of a tempering solution. Now we can test from there whether or not it's an improvement, and how we do that is running the automated test case again. Pretty simple and straightforward stuff, but it's very important that you get this in order, because if you don't, you'll find that you end up scratching your head with some strange things happen. So you run and compare the test case, figure out if it's an improvement, but one thing to remember is after you've done that step, you do have another problem. You realize that now you've delayed the loading of Java, you'll notice the user experience in the first couple of seconds is slower, because the app work has to be done sometimes. It can't just disappear. So is that a relevant, is that an okay side effect? So most people would say no. So what we do need to find is another way to solve the problem. But by all means, you can try it. This could be valid for some people. So after you've done hints that I found while a profiling application is work with community members. I can't stress this enough. Upstream people are usually very friendly and more than willing to help you with the code. Consistency, after you run a test, make sure that you reboot, because if you don't reboot, you'll be surprised at home with hot caches. The file system cache, the second startup of an application is always faster than first. And the 80-20 rule, which means work on the low-hanging fruit. There's no point optimizing a rarely used loop or a rarely used part of the function. Optimize and fix the problem that is most commonly going to be, that code section is most commonly going to be run. Okay, so the last step of profiling is upstream acceptance. If anybody's ever seen a developer attempt to submit code upstream, sometimes it can be done humbly, sometimes it can be done really aggressively. Your code sucks, it's fixed. That usually doesn't go down too well with upstream, I've noticed that. Fortunately, in the open source community, most people are humble, and I do accept that they may not have the best. But that's one thing important to say. It's important that you share your test case. This will show the developer that you care to really take note of what you're trying to do, and then they'll be able to reproduce it on their local machine. And then share the patch as well, also very important. A lot of people seem to say, I have a fix, do you think this is the right way to do it? And then we've got to test the code bit. I mean, also important. Accept criticism. As I mentioned earlier in the OpenOffice example, it may not be acceptable to have Java load later. That laggy user interface just after GUI started, that may not be acceptable. So accept criticism, they say this is not what we want to do. However, feel free to try again. So yeah, accept failure. You may not always get it right the first time, but as I said, most people are willing to accept, most developers are willing to accept any help you want to get. So yeah, now I'm going to move on to some of the traditional tools used by profiling, people doing profiling. We have the generic TOP and PS. TOP and PS are essentially just reading from the PROC interface. It depends on when the kernel wants to update the statistics in flash PROC, then these tools read from PROC and then display it to the end user. We have SysStat and IOStat, VMStat and IOStat, which is part of the SysStat package. VMStat shows the virtual memory usage, and IOStat shows the IO read to disk. Xtrace shows when your system calls are being made. I mean, if you want a good time, just Xtrace the program, and once you're running, you'll be surprised how many times your system gets to disk. And also free. Now, the problem with these tools is that they are not very fine grained. They don't actually focus on a single application. They may show you a view of the system at the time, but they're not immediate. You won't see immediate spikes on quick allocations and deallocations of memory, which will often result in out of memory, especially if you're allocating massive amounts and then freeing massive amounts of memory. And problems may not be readily exposed because they're not very fine grained. So the open source community has stepped up to the plate and developed some very more specific tools. Valgrind. I'm sure there's some people here who have used Valgrind, and it is a very powerful tool. It allows you to see common memory misuse, common thread misuse, like say you've got a deadlock thread, and also a cache profile, like CPU's cache. Now, it can run various skins, and it allows you to delve into the process to see how it's working. Okay, and I'm going to hand this over to Eugene for a bit, and he'll talk about OpenProfile and also System Data.
Hi, OpenProfile is another tool that many people have been using, I guess. It's been around for quite a while. OpenProfile, in case you do not know what it is a system-wide profiling tool. It runs in the background transparently. It uses the hardware performance counters on CPUs like Intel and AMD. On CPUs that do not support hardware performance counters, it uses timer interrupt mechanism. Usually what OpenProfile does that usually it tries to, at every count, it tries to get a certain sampling of, how the functions in the running application or running kernel when it's executed. And then at the end of the profiling, it gives you a list of data, and then for you to pinpoint which function actually is the most inefficient or something like that. I won't really go through more in depth on how OpenProfile is going to work, but I'm going to focus more on SystemTap. How many of you have already started using SystemTap? Raise your hand. No? Well, how many have not heard of SystemTap at all? Okay. SystemTap is a project by Red Hat. We collaborated with Intel, Hitachi, and IBM. We have been developing this tool for a year. More than a year now. As Rick mentioned earlier, we introduced some traditional tools that are available in Linux and Linux, and it has been there for a long time. But what happens when you try to instrument or profile applications, but these tools do not give you the right information or do not give you the information that you want? So what are you going to do? Well, there are many ways, but I can think of two main ways. One is to download the source code of the existing traditional tools, modify them, add in functions, add in procedures that allows you to get information about your running application or running kernel, and then compile it, run, and get an output, and be happy with that. Another way is to write an application from scratch, get the information from the running application or running kernel, and again, be happy with that. But this step, it's very tedious, it's going to take a lot of time. and probably not worthwhile to do so. So what we try to do, well, what we try to achieve with System Tab is to provide a new way of getting information, which is to, we provide you a tool, and all you have to do is to write customized, simple System Tab scripts, okay, using the System Tab scripting language that looks like AWK or C. Let System Tab process these scripts, and let System Tab give you the output. So in this way, there's no need to write a new tool to do instrumentation. You just simply write scripts. So at the moment, System Tab supports kernel-level instrumentation. User space instrumentation is on its way. At Red Hat, we have another colleague, his name is Roland. He's at Westport, I believe. He wrote a U-trace kernel patch to replace P-trace. And this is actually available on Fedora kernel, and Red Hat has 5 kernels already. Basically, what that does is that we're going to implement something called U-props, user space props, okay, based on U-trace, to do something similar to K-props, which what System Tab is currently making use of in the background. Okay, and System Tab is a free and open source software licensed in GPL. Okay, so what can you use System Tab for? Now, why do you want to use? As I mentioned earlier, you can use System Tab to write customized instrumentation or profiling tools that you want. You can also use it for debugging. You can also use it to do live feedback of certain variables that you try to keep track in the kernel or running applications. Or you can do a lot of other things, as you can see in all these green drops. So let me go a little bit more in depth on how System Tab works internally. Okay, so System Tab actually has 5 phases, which you can actually specify as one of the flags when you run System Tab 2. So there are 5 phases. First is passing phase. So as I mentioned earlier, you need to write a simple System Tab script. This script goes through the System Tab and do the passing. What passing does is that you make sure that the syntax that you have specified in the script are all correct. And then once that is done, you go through the second step, elaboration. Okay, so the System Tab script contains functions called props. What props means is that these are functions that you want to monitor in a running application or running kernel. Things like sys underscore read, sys underscore write, that kind of things. So what elaboration does is that it tries to resolve these symbols in a running kernel. Find out where this function exists in the kernel, which directory, which source code, which line. And once that is done, once the symbols that you specify, things that you want to prop or you want to do, want to find out from the system is resolvable, then we go to the next step, which is compile. And System Tab will translate this System Tab script into a kernel module that based on kprops. And then do a mock prop, run it, gather the information that you run that you need, and then stop the module, unload it, and then display the output. So let me go through how a System Tab script looks like. This is how you declare a variable. Okay, System Tab scripting language looks like AWK, it looks like C, it looks like Perl. It resembles a lot of existing languages. So if you do not know how to program, you don't have to worry too much, because it's pretty easy to understand, it's not that difficult to learn. And if we already know programming, then this looks like a bit okay. System Tab scripting language is a loosely tab language. You do not need to declare a variable. You will automatically determine what variable tab you should have. And this is how you declare a global variable. If you need to use a local variable, there's no need to declare at all. You simply use it. Next, we have the prop entry and prop termination. So what that means is that at the beginning of the script, when you run it, the very first function you will execute is the prop begin. So this is the best place to do any initialization or any printf that you want to do for the header of the output. Prop end basically execute at the end of the script. That's the very last function that you will execute. Okay. Well, even though there are 2 props, begin and end, that you can use is optional. So it's really up to you. Okay, next, going to go to there's 4 details over here. So if you ever program in C or Java, then you probably recognize this. This is a typical array with a square braces up, square brackets. This is the three arrow operator. Okay, you have the usual operators like plus, minus, equal, and so on, similar to C, but you have also an extra one called this. Basically what it does is that it's an equivalent to count plus equal 1, or count equal count plus 1. But what is so special about this is that you can actually use this operator, increment the statistics, and then use specialized function to print out ASCII graph. So it's just simply call a function, it will do this graph for you. So it gives you a better idea of what is happening in your system, rather than just looking at numbers, you'll also look at graphs. And the light blue one, built-in functions, things like getting the name of the current running process when the script is running, for example, execute name. And there are other built-in functions that you can use, so in the main pages. And lastly, this one. There are two ways to call a function. One is using kernel drop function, bracket, the simple name, or you can specify the location, like where, which directory, which C file, which line number. So make sure you got the source code with you, and make sure that you got the right source code for the running kernel, the same version, and then you can specify the symbol that you want to pop, or whatever lines that you want to keep track of the variables. You can also use syscall.read or syscall something or something.something. What that means is that you have a set of libraries in system tabs. Okay? You don't really call them libraries, but you call them tab sets, T-A-P-S-E-T. What we hope to achieve is that we don't expect an end user or an administrator to know kernel development or to pay very much attention in kernel development or know the various different functions for virtual memory, know what causes trashing, what is the shop bar, what's the function that's responsible for shopping and all that. We don't really expect them to know. But what we did is that we collect a set of libraries for people to use, okay? So for people to simply look at the keyword and understand that what it does immediately without knowing how it, which function the problem is responsible. So for example, call.read is very simple. You know that it is a system call and it's responsible for read, something like that. Yes, please. Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, you can use this three left arrow operator and make use of this aggregation function to display ASCII graph. Okay, there is another tool that is available a little bit earlier than System Tab and is developed by Sun, that's called dtrace. In terms of functionality, it's very similar to System Tab, but the only problem is that it has different licenses. So dtrace is licensed in CDDL, or what also known as Common Development and Distribution License. And System Tab is licensed in GNU Public License. These two licenses, code from these two licenses, do not mesh together. You cannot link them together. You cannot take a code that is from dtrace and put it in System Tab. And you cannot distribute them, and you cannot derive any work with System Tab. And which is why we have this, from dtrace, and which is why we have System Tab. Dtrace is only available in Solaris, and I think they ported it to FreeBSD and Apple. So System Tab can run on there. Hand over to Wade to explain more about Basic Graph.
Okay, SpyGraph is a program we've been developing, a graphical application that helps you easily interpret the output from System Tab. At about 10 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning, your eyes start getting a bit tired, you don't really, the numbers don't make a lot of sense. So because of this, we've started a program called SpyGraph. It consists of the graphical plotting tool, does bar graphs and line graphs, and also the profile itself. It does not require the graphical program to run, however it can be run inside. Okay, the profile itself calls a system tab, a shell script, VM stat, or basically anything that outputs it in the correct format, or can be formatted to put it in the right format, and visualizes it in the application. It's still very early in development, but we're accepting patches and any contributions that you want, so feel free to get involved. Here's a screenshot of a version from about a month ago. These are the two system tab scripts, the left-hand side. This was game running. The first version, I don't know if you can really tell, the peak towards the end, it actually is a bit smoother on the bottom one. And from there, you can easily see that Game did less I/O with that run, and that was when I modified the game function to read the entire file and rather than part of the file, because it did use it again later anyway, because as you can tell, it peaked during the first example. So that's just one way to easily visualize small changes to the code. And the right half is some code generated by GNUplot, which hopefully should be integrated by sometime at the end of the week, which the top one is, trying to remember, the top one is network poll for games. The next one is smart card reader.
It's a smart card reader. You can see that it tries to do a very fixed interval of read and write and a polling. So somehow this daemon is running on the system, it's doing nothing, I don't have a smart card reader, but it's trying to do a polling at a very fixed interval at a very very regular timing.
So as you can tell, this program needs to be fixed because it will really chew your battery on a laptop or on a desktop, just continual calling bad. And the last one is the I/O used by VPN SIG at startup, read, write, and patience as well, I believe.
Yeah, what we hope to achieve is that we notice that a lot of compiling tools, a lot of instrumentation tools, gives you statistics and data, and lots of data. But what we hope to achieve is to write a simple tool like Spyglass, which allows you to import this data, and then we make it into smart graph, and then you can do analysis of different graphs and then understand these results better. Okay, there's lots of more stories that I can share with you guys with our system tab. I'm not going to go through like 10, 15, or 20 of them, but I picked three contributions from Red Hat, HP, and IBM, and I'm here to share with you guys. So the first one I wrote myself, I had a customer, and they wanted to know when UDB Telegram drops, when they send, when they receive. But the problem is that some of the tools that we have existingly, like NetStack, doesn't really show you how many telegrams, UDB telegrams that have been dropped when you send. Or tools like IP traffic doesn't really show you UDB statistics. So what I did is that I wrote a very simple system tab script that is this long. Okay. But I don't want to go through the details of the entire script, but let's focus on this portion. So basically, in order to find out the UDB telegram loss, we just simply need to find out from these three kernel functions, which is the UDB send message, ICMP send, and UDB queue receive STB. So by simply writing a simple script like this, getting the variables for the kernel functions and running, you get this output. This is the same output that was created from a written in D-Trace, but of course I didn't know the source code. Another example from PHP is finding out the SCSI request size. So according to that, they ran a benchmark. They noticed there's a mismatch in the SCSI request, the I/O count. So what you did is that you wrote a very simple system tab script to find out the SCSI request sizes and accounts of specific devices. So again, this is a very simple script that you can easily write. And in order to find out the SCSI request size, there's only one prop function that you need to specify. In this case, the SCSI subsystem I/O dispatching function. So you can see that in the kernel source code, there could be like a long list of code, lots of variables that's used, but you can simply pick up the functions that are responsible for SCSI request sizes and then get this data or this value for this variable and display it out to the screen for you to understand what's happening. So this is how it operates, like similar steps. And finally, the next script that I'm going to show is something from IBM. They wanted to know, okay, who is the guy or in their system using the most I/O statistics? Which user? So, I mean, traditional I/O related tools don't really tell you statistics right to the user's level. So you can easily write a system tab script to do that. So again, it's a very short script. Focus on these two functions at the BFS level, virtual file system. And what we do is that we plot the read function and the write function, get the number of reads and number of writes. And this is what we got. Okay, the thing about system tab is that we get information from the kernel level, okay, that's why we are unable to read the slash etc slash password to get the person's username, but what we got is the best that we can, which is the user ID. So there are lots of other more stories that you can take a look. If you want to find out more, you can take down the URL.
That concludes our talk. Thanks for listening, and good for the URL.
Yeah, okay, so again, just to do some advertisement. My name is Eugene, this is our email. You can write an email to us if you have any questions about system tab or spyglass or some profiling applications that you want to use. And before we forget, we would like to thank Red Hat for giving us that off to come down here and give a talk. We don't really come from Sydney. So yeah.
Thank you, Margot. Probably watch this.
Yeah, and if you have any questions, please raise up your hand. You would like to, thanks.
Is there any plan to extend this to code use data?
Are there any plans to extend this to support Protein user space applications?
Yes, like I mentioned earlier, we are working on user pro. We do not have a specific date when this is going to be available, but we expect maybe the next 6 months or so. And when that happens, you will be able to add the processor space application using by making sure that the application that you run, okay, is compiled with debug info. So if you use an RPM based distribution, you can simply download the debug info RPM install and then use from that, express that.
Happy back?
Okay, for the first question, I do not know the answer, and I won't talk about it. And for the second question, E-Trade has the ability to do user space and kernel space probing, but the problem is that the way they implemented this is that they pre-defined prop points in the kernel and user space libraries and applications. So when this is done, they simply write the trace script to prop to hook these props that are predefined and get the information. But what system that hopes to achieve, okay, because the kernel level instrumentation is done already, and we are working on the user space portion. And what we have done is that we want to do things dynamically. We don't want predefined points. So if you want to find out certain information about kernel, running kernel or kernel application, you can do it anywhere. Of course, there are some places that you cannot prop, like interrupts and all that. But most of the places in the source code, you should be able to prop. And of course, we also try to do something like what D-Trace is doing, which is to predefine points. That's why we also introduce static instrumentation, where you can include a header file and then use a macro in your source code, define it there, and then use system tab script to reference the point that you specified.
Now the question.
I might be wrong here, but there's another pretty cool script which is similar to me. How does that relate to it?
Okay, this question is there is another project called Fizz, and how is it related to that? Fizz is also a Red Hat project. Fizz is a different thing. Fizz, what the goal of Fizz is to provide a new kind of debugger. If you have used GDB or other traditional debuggers before, you realize that it was written a long time ago. And sometimes it's difficult for you to visualize or difficult for you to do debugging with multi-threaded and application and so on, or maybe a Java application and so on. What Fizz hope to achieve is that Fizz hopes to provide you with a GUI and some graphical components, okay, so that you can do tracing right to the thread level and in a distributed manner.
Okay.
It has a different goal, but it's just more like for debugging. Yeah. But of course, you can also use free Java API to write your own scripts like your own sys trace, your own L trace. That is possible as well. And that can be done with system tab. So in a way, there are many different projects. They seem to overlap with each other and one in some ways, but it has different objectives, different goals.
Not back.
Okay. Overhead compared to dynamic instrumentation and static instrumentation. Okay. Dynamic instrumentation has slightly over more overhead. For more details, we have it on in a paper that is published in OLS 2005 or 2006. You might want to check it out.
But when it comes down to it, whenever you profile an application, you've got to accept some overhead. Be it the higher the monogram, the accuracy, the more overhead you're going to have. So yeah, you just got to learn to accept that. As long as it's predictable, as long as it's reproducible and you do it again, the next test, you should get the same results.
But the fact that you use system tab and get the data back to the kernel, and it doesn't really go through lots of system calls if you use a traditional kind of profiling tools, and that really reduces a lot of overhead. Definitely. Any other questions? Okay, thank you for listening and
thank you. Thank you.